It is Wednesday. It's April 3. Can you believe it's April already? The Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. A very good morning to you if you are just tuning in. Yes, with Michael having celebrated his 43rd birthday yesterday. Over there commentating in the Indian Premier League and us having some issues getting him into the program yesterday. We went deep into the production meeting and got Dean Bulldog Richie in today.
How old do you think Clarkey looks in the honesty stakes? Would you say 43? Or a little bit older, or a little bit younger?
He's a bit younger.
He looks his age. I was about to say he looks his age.
Okay.
Just does he look older or younger than me?
Are you the same age?
A lot younger.
Stuff you.
No, you blokes look about your age, I reckon.
What about you?
What do you reckon?
I reckon you look a bit older. You had a hard life, haven't you? He's run all the way, Lossa.
I'll accept that. I'm happy with that.
You know what? As long as you're happy within your skin, Laurie.
Hey, I'm always happy. I'm always happy.
Well, 5:38 AM, I'm not quite sure about that.
Teams are out for round five already. Now, Premier League's on the sporting as well. West Ham and Tottenham, 1-1. Half-time. There is Ange and Spurs chase fourth place in a Champions League spot. Burnley and Wolves, 1-1. 67 minutes gone. Bournemouth and Palace, scoreless. Nottingham Forest, 3-1 over Fulham. And Newcastle have a 1-0 lead against Everton in the 83rd minute of that game this morning. There was a game in the A-League last night as well, and it was a stoppage time winner from Max Ballard to ensure the Central Coast Mariners beat Melbourne City 2-1. There's a game tonight, Perth hosting City FC as well. Just some other news around as well. I see Zach Lomax, of course, has been confirmed by St. George Illawarra that he has reached agreement with the club to leave at the end of the season. So he's a free agent. He can talk to other clubs and is believed to be meeting with Parramatta today. Just also with the boxing situation and Tim Zhu, that's what I wanted to mention. The blame game certainly on. So Tim Zhu's trainer has defended his cut man, or Mark Gambin, who's got plenty of criticism after that loss to Sebastian Fundora. And now the Zhu camp's pointing the finger at the doctor for not stopping the fight after round four. And it's been, well, his camp saying 6 to 9 months until he'll fight again. And naturally, that is, well, should be, the Fundora rematch. The Fundora camp has confirmed that they will honour that rematch, which was a verbal agreement in the lead-up to this fight between the camps. But I'd say it'd be interesting to... I wouldn't be optimistic they'll get the Fundora camp to Australia, as we'd like. I dare say they'll have to fight over there.
I spoke to Jeff Fenwick on Sunday about this, and Jeff was most upset about how it all unfolded over there in Vegas, how the cut was looked after by his corner. Jeff loves Tim Zhu, got a lot of respect for Tim, but just said how the whole thing was handled. His theory was Tim won the first two rounds. He could and should have been told that we will stop it after four, go out and win the next round, go hard. And they've got three rounds up. Obviously, he gets to retain his title belt. Yes, there would be a rematch, but at least Tim Zhu comes home with his belt.
You know more about boxing than me. So, obviously, it has to go three rounds. Is that
four.
Right? So, it's got to go four rounds. Right, yeah? So, if it goes four
then
rounds.
Then they go to the cards.
Right, yep. If it's been stopped. Correct. But whose decision? Is it the doctor's decision only? Or if I'm in the corner, can I keep saying to the doctor, hey, keep looking at this cut, keep looking at this cut, we think it's no good. And if the doctor goes, rightio, I still think you can fight with it, play on? Is that how it...
Well, the doctor should have stopped the fight, Loz, yes. It's his decision as to whether it should have kept going on.
Yeah, but is the doctor the sole sort of decision maker?
But
can you go to the doctor in your corner after four rounds and say, mate, this fight needs to stop, our
100%. I can't see why you can't. I mean, the doctor should be able to see it clearly with his own two eyes as well. Tim Zhu's wiping blood like windscreen wipers away from his eyes. Yeah. He couldn't see. Yeah. It should not have been allowed to go on for 10 more rounds.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Well, why didn't Tim's camp do that?
Well, they may well have done that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's all I'm trying to
The doctor did come
ascertain. Did Tim's camp just go, no, bugger it, we'll just let the fight go? Or did they go to the doctor after 3 or 4 hours and go,
I don't know,
listen,
boss,
we need this stopped?
Yeah, I can't answer it specifically, but you would imagine at some point they would have said, look, this can't go on. But the doctor didn't stop it, and we've ended up with this,
but if you
ridiculous situation where a bloke fights 10 rounds in a world title fight when he can't see.
Yeah, no, and totally understand that. But if they thought they were losing, that they want to continue to fight.
Perhaps.
Because if it stops after 4 rounds and they think they're on the wrong side, you don't want the fight called off.
The theory was Tim won the first 2 rounds, and if he was told going into rounds 3 or 4 that it was going to be stopped, then he could have perhaps gone harder and stronger, nabbed one more round, and he would have won. Look, it's all hypothetical. I get that. But I thought it became quite farcical.
Oh, yeah, but I just want to understand the situation they were in, because what I'm sort of thinking now is that they didn't want to call it off because they probably thought
he was behind.
Perhaps. So they needed it to keep going.
Perhaps.
All right, with Bulldog in with us, his regular segment is right now. Okay, Bulldog, you've got a column today in the Daily Telegraph, Bulldog's Bite. And you've written extensively under the headline, Endless Latrell Booing Brings Racism Into Play, is the headline. So tell us the crux of this story.
I wrote a column, Middo, in regards to the incessant booing of Latrell Mitchell this year. It's gone on every game and it's getting worse. I posed the question in today's Telegraph and online, why? Is it because of his ability? Is it because of his political stance? On-field indiscretions? Is there some jealousy there? Perceived arrogance? Or, let's be direct, is it because he's Indigenous? I don't see other players with white skin copping the same amount of flack that Latrell cops. Adam Goods copped the same. Anthony Mundine copped the same. And the link between all three is that they are Indigenous and they all fought for a cause. I didn't in the column suggest all rugby league fans are racist. Clearly they're not. But when the hostility toward one player who happens to be Indigenous becomes sustained and deep-seated, then I believe we have a problem. And I wrote in the column a paragraph that says, incessant booing of South Sydney's Indigenous star Latrell Mitchell this year has pushed far beyond knockabout fans enjoying cheeky weekend banter with an opposition player. The taunting of Mitchell has become sinister and ominous. What do you think?
Well, I have to say, I've never thought about it that way. But I would like to think in this day and age, people aren't booing him because of his skin colour. All right? I understand he polarises people and not everyone is always happy with what Latrell has to say. But I would think there could be a minority of people that would be because they don't like him. They just don't like him. And every time he gets the ball or around near the ball, they want to. I'd like to believe that there was no racism in sport. But you know that a minority of people, they carry it around with them.
I quoted Blake
consciously
Solly.
Or subconsciously.
Correct. I quoted Blake Solly. I told Blake that I was doing the column and he supplied a quote which says, I can't really explain the motivations of those who boo Latrell, but like everyone in the game, you hope it isn't based on his race or his principled stance against racism. Booing on that basis would be completely against the values of our sport.
Hmm. Yeah, and I totally support Blake with that comment as well. And I think that Latrell, given that he is outspoken about all issues in the game, and in particular racism, I think that a lot of people are waiting for him to fail and fall, and they will be critical of him. But I'm sitting here, right now, saying I don't think it's racist-based, but I'm not silly enough to suggest that there's probably not a minority of people out there that probably carry that grudge with them and still, you know, hate the fact that he's an Indigenous person that speaks his mind.
Why then? Why, Mido, in your opinion, is he booed?
How about I give our listeners opinions?
Sure.
Because we have just, unlike any other player, we see it on our text line. The straightaway his name comes up and text. They just fly in. This is some of your say. Hey, Bulldog, I don't think Latrell is being booed because of his race. I think he's being booed because he's incredibly unpopular, is perceived by most fans as arrogant, self-entitled, who has not delivered on the hype, seems to get away with more than pretty much any other player, both at South but also in league generally. We see other unpopular players booed across the NRL all the time. This is no different. That's Rusty. It's not races. He has asked for most of it. He is overrated and an underachiever. Morning, boys. It's not racism. It's just tall poppy syndrome. He likes to stick his head up and stir the pot so people want to take his head off, so to speak. Media have got to stop insinuating that all white people are racist, says Smitty. That's just some of your say. And there's many more as well. Keep them coming. 0419767272. I think it's a combination of a few things that are being said there. Certainly people, and straight away I think of the Joey Manu incident, and there's been others that have certainly got under people's skin.
He does irritate people. There's no denying that. Even the last 2 weeks, he had the James Tedesco sin bin and then the hip into Josh Adokar's hit.
Yep.
But again, they are small indiscretions. Does that justify continual booing?
No, I think what happens though too, Bulldog, is that people go to the game, and if someone starts to boo it, and it's your support, you just join in.
And then a lot of people boo.
Yeah, but a lot of people probably don't even know what they're booing. All right, they just go bang right out. He gets the ball, but I think it's a combination of everything.
Yeah,
I think it's a combination of everything. Hmm. I don't think it's just being racist, but I think some people would have that racist tone in their booing.
I wrote this, Laurie.
That's me personally thinking like that.
Because he's outspoken. Yes. People hate being confronted around whether they harbour a whiff of racism, but this is an unavoidable question the game and its fans cannot sidestep. I just am finding more and more that it's becoming a bit more sinister, this continual booing. I understand how people think. Most people disagree. I'm not saying people are racism. I'm simply posing the question, do we think that there's still an element of racism in the game? And how can we justify, or what are the explanations behind Latrell being booed?
It's not in the game, Bulldog, as in it's only in the game, because I think people face racism wherever they go. So it's not just rugby league. It's rugby union. It'll be AFL. It'll be in your workplace. Yep. There's always a minority of people that still carry that around. And some voice it and others don't. And some have it consciously, subconsciously, whatever way around it you want to talk about it. It still exists. We're not denying that it doesn't exist, because it does. But I think with Latrell, I think it's just a combination of everything.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why wouldn't you just boo Josh Adokar? Because he's Indigenous.
Why aren't white people getting booed?
Like, otherwise, if it was a racist thing, you'd be booing all Aboriginal players. But I think there is a little bit of racist tone in the booing by a very small minority, but I think it's a combination of just everything.
I think you're spot on there, Loz. By the way, at the moment, I think he and Cody Walker are heading to places like Moree and other places around New South Wales. And we know, and we've got a lot of listeners in those sort of areas, Moree, Dubbo, etc., where there's a lot of youth crime at the moment. And Latrell and Cody, with the New South Wales Police Force, are heading to those areas to try and, you know...
And the Premier.
And the Premier as well, involved with that. What they're doing on that front is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because those towns are... There's some areas in those towns at the moment who are under siege. Yeah.
And that'll be their biggest achievement in life if they can help turn the crime rate around with Indigenous youth in those areas. That'll be bigger than anything they've done on a footy field, let me tell you. Mm. And young Indigenous people look up to high-profile Indigenous people, in particular from the high profile sports. And if Latrell and Cody are out there and getting kids on board and influencing them in the right way, that can only be a good thing. And I remember talking to Matty Bowen about it, and I don't know what the exact numbers were, but the Cowboys had this program because truancy was a big thing up there in the far north. So if you didn't turn up for school, then you didn't get a letter or the principal wanting to talk to you. Matty Bowen would go and talk to the family, and Matty Bowen had talked to the kids about how important it is to get education. And I'm just making these numbers up. So it went from something like about, I don't know, the rate of truancy from, you know, say it was 80%, went down to about 30%. Mm. The influence and the impact that sportsmen, high-profile Indigenous sporting people, men and women can have on the Indigenous community is massive.
The general consensus through the text messages and social media is that the fans don't believe it's racism. They believe it's a combination. Mm. I simply pose the question. I think it's an issue that we should discuss.
Okay. Well, gosh, there's a lot of text there, but we have to move on. And I want to ask you about this outrageous suggestion.
Ah, your favourite topic.
Just, angered me. Genuinely
good.
Angered me.
I'm glad I got you angry.
You want to ban long kickoffs.
I said, is it something that the NRL should consider? Oh. The long kickoff, Mitto, let's just look at the facts. We are trying to eradicate...
To stop everything.
...concussion.
To just... There won't be contact sport left, Bulldog. There
let
won't
me finish. Two players weighing 110 kgs, running 30 kgs an hour...
Where do you want to stop?
...from a collision. I'm just saying, do we consider trying to stop that? And that is from a long kickoff or a long dropout. I wrote that, and again, copped a bit. I did note, though, and I've spoken to Greg Alexander about this, and this is the quote from Brandy, and I think Brandy has nailed it. I've said that it's potentially the most dangerous part of the game. Three knockouts so far this season. No one bends to make a tackle. It's generally three defenders converging on the ball carrier, two defenders either side, one in front, at head height, running at speed. Another strategy might be needed if we're about protecting players. Could we restart with a 20-metre tap?
How boring.
Potentially. But if it stops blokes forgetting who their grandkids are in 15 years' time, have we made the right decision? Mm. Jake Preston gets whacked by Shaq Mitchell. Purely legal. Mm. Both going at it at monstrous pace and with a monstrous G-force. Jake Preston breaks his jaw.
So what's the percentage for injuries to kickoffs? What would it be? 0.002%? I just honestly,
what do
where
you
does
think?
It stop? It's gonna. If where does it all stop?
Look, I'm with you, Mitter. Where does it stop? And if you want to take that element out of the game, okay. But there's a lot of things that you're looking at as well to take out of the game. And then if you do take all these collisions out, is it the same game?
It's not.
You know, and when you sign up to play rugby league, I get it. You want to make it as safe as you possibly can. But there is an element of risk when you play any sport.
I'm not trying to get rid of the collision, and I'm not trying to change the fabric. I am saying, though, do we try to pull back in areas where you know there's going to be monstrous collision? Mm. And blokes, if you catch the ball on the dead ball line, Mitto, and you kick off, that's 60 metres. So you've got roughly 30 metres each to run.
Yep.
You get two, or in as Greg Alexander says, three in the tackle. You're getting four blokes running at 60 metres at 30k an hour. You are going to have one hell of a collision.
Yeah, you will.
And if heads are involved, which they have been this year, there's been three KOs.
Yep.
Do we consider removing that from our sport?
Well, I'll put it to you. How many knockouts have we had from players standing 10 metres from the play the ball?
Of course. I get that, Laurie.
No, there's more. There's more than them. There's more collisions from players standing 10 metres from the play the ball than there is from a 60-metre kickoff. That would might be my point to you there.
It's just a matter of perhaps eradicating high-risk collision.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying, high risk, that's high risk. Because there's more happening because you've got more tackles. And that's happening 10 metres apart. So if you've got head collision 10 metres apart, and there's a lot more of them than what there is off a kickoff, what rule are you going to change first?
Oh, it's been a great half an hour. I'm off for a cup of coffee.
Welcome back. Swans assistant coach Jared McVeigh will join us shortly. Just got a track report through from Randwick. There was some rain around Sydney yesterday. Not a great deal, though. So Randwick, in the last 24 hours, copped 2.7 mils. So the track currently a good four still. And the rail in the true position, heading towards day one of the championships there on Saturday. But we're obviously keeping a very close eye on Thursday, particularly Friday. Race day, well, it's a very, well, 0 to 30 mils is forecast. So, you know, range there. But certainly Friday, up to 90 mils of rain forecast. And a bit on Thursday as well, up to 40 mils on Thursday. So they're the 2 days we're watching most closely this week, heading towards day one. But let's take the glass half full approach, and it won't get to that level of rain. And on Saturday will be sweet, hopefully. We'll see how it all transpires. Now, the Premier League this morning, we've got a couple of games that have just concluded. Everton have scored a late goal against Newcastle. Calvert-Lewin from the penalty spot in the 88th minute. So that's finished 1-1 there at St James's Park. Nottingham Forest, a quality 3-1 win against Fulham after leading 3-0 at half-time. Matches in progress very late on. Bournemouth have scored against Crystal Palace in the 79th minute and lead 1-0. Burnley and Wolves, 1-1. Those two games are in stoppage time. And West Ham and Ange Postecoglou's Tottenham, 1-1. 65 minutes gone at the London Stadium there this morning. So that means, as it stands, Tottenham would be 2 points behind Aston Villa in the race for the top four. But still 9 points clear of Manchester United in sixth. United, though, do have a game in hand. More games tomorrow in the English Premier League. Dean Bulldog Richie is joining us in the studio this morning with Pup over there in the Indian Premier League, fresh off celebrating his 43rd birthday as well. A quarter bit yesterday. We'll have Dick Fain on tomorrow, too, for those who hope to tune in early this morning. Dick was catching a flight, so we'll have him to talk all US sport tomorrow, get his predictions for the Final Four in the NCAA March Madness college basketball. I watched a bit yesterday, Loz, the phenomenon that is Caitlin Clark over there, and she continued her domination of women's college basketball. 41 points, 12 assists, 7 rebounds. She made 9 three-pointers. So she plays for Iowa as they advance to the Final Four in the women's NCAA tournament. 94-87, they beat LSU. And I hadn't seen much of her actually play. I read a bit about, you know, how she's taken the season by storm. She is next level. She is so much better than every other player on the court. It's almost embarrassing.
I saw a little bit of that yesterday, Mido, and she's a very good player. Like, her ability to just put the ball in the basket was phenomenal. So she was coming up against a girl by the name of Angel Reese, who was very good, and I think last season's most outstanding player of the Final Four. And there was a bit of rivalry between the two. And she basically last year, when LSU won and Reese was on the winning side, they taunted them a little bit, you know. And then they got their revenge. They got their revenge in this game yesterday. Also saw Ted Lasso was in the crowd. He must be a former uni student of the college, because I saw him in the crowd and he was getting right into it. So he might have been is it the Hawkeyes? Is that who they were?
Yeah, that's Iowa.
The Hawkeyes, Iowa? Yep, he might. Is that where he's from?
Jason Sudeikis, that's his name, isn't it? Yeah, I think you might be right, Loz.
Yeah.
I think he's an old Iowa.
Was he an Iowa boy? Or went to uni there?
I'll have to look that up. Anyway. But I did see that in the crowd there yesterday.
But no, it was good. But you know what else is good? Just to have the great little bulldog in the chair this morning. He's giving me great energy. We've got a great relationship. And We're strong as ever.
Morning, Bulldog. Said, I got up at 4:30 this morning. I got bags under my eyes. I come in here. I get taxed at 50%. It's my second job. I got Bib and Bub on either side attacking me, and the text line hates me. When could I come back?
And it's shut down.
I'm having
the text
a ball.
Line.
I'm having a ball.
We got that many text messages, Bulldog, about you. You lost that argument.
Yeah. Which one?
The kickoff argument.
Kickoff argument.
Yeah, it's...
But I'll tell you what, you'll win the war. You'll win the war.
Why?
Because I reckon they will change it.
There you go.
Probably right.
I reckon they will change it. Now, I don't know when they'll change it, but they want to try and eliminate the collisions in the game.
You can feel it's brewing.
Oh, yeah.
You can feel, and older supporters like you and I, those who, when we do resist, you resist for so long, and then they get it through eventually.
Yeah. Next, we won't be playing contact sport until anyone's 18. So let's see how that goes for the footy codes. All right. Swans assistant coach Jared McVeigh about to join us. Gather round in the AFL this weekend. And the Swans face the West Coast Eagles, who they beat last season. Swans fans will certainly remember by 171 points. That was a bit later in the season, though. It wasn't in Gather Round, but this match will be played at Mount Barker up there in the Adelaide Hills on Saturday afternoon. And great to have him on. Jared, very good morning to you, mate.
Good morning, boys. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your time. And coming off a narrow loss, 5 points the margin there against Richmond last weekend, a bit of a reality check, I guess. Where did you feel the side fell short?
Yeah, look, really disappointing to lose on Sunday after a really strong 3 weeks for us. I was probably our defensive side of the game that really cost us in the end. We think we've been pretty strong in that area for the first few weeks, and then they really broke us down and got through us too easily and too quickly. So that was probably the story of the day for us. And while it's disappointing, we get to fly that to Adelaide tomorrow for a great weekend.
Jared, after such a strong start to the season, I wouldn't suggest you were complacent, but did you get into some sort of comfort zone, perhaps?
Look, it's hard to say. You always try and get a read on the players before a game. Are they switched on? Are they not? But, we've all tried that and you never know. So, look, we prepared well as they normally do. And, to Richmond's credit, they brought extreme pressure on us and, we're fantastic on the day. They were fighting for their first win of the season, and played really well. So, it's disappointing for us, but, we've got a short turnaround and we play Saturday this week and, we're looking forward to that already.
Was there one aspect of the game, Jared, that really stood out that you didn't do well enough?
Just the defensive side, So when, the Tigers brought the ball in from their back 50, they took it to our inside 50 and scored just way too easily, and we've been really strong in that area. So that was the main thing that we focused on this week, is just our defence and getting our systems right. We know the boys work really hard and, our attack side of the game flows pretty well. So it's probably the defensive side, that wins most games of footy or most games in world sport.
And I see you've lost Dane Rampey for what, up to a month as well, Jared?
Yeah, it looked disappointing for Ramps. It's his first ever hamstring at 34, so he's probably wasn't sure what it felt like. But he'll definitely miss this week. Then we go into the bye, so he's still got a couple of weeks there, so he might be available after that.
Yeah, and I see Taylor Adams made a return in the twos last weekend. Obviously up for selection this week. Did he get reading something? Did he get charged or get up on report for a couple of incidents on the weekend?
Yeah, not that I know of. Right. But he's been great, for our group. He'll certainly come in frame of selection this week. But, coming from a really good system in Collingwood, who obviously won last year, and his knowledge and experience for our younger players has been invaluable, and also for our coaches as well, learning, a couple of new systems, that the Pies run, which has been invaluable for all of us.
Callum Mills, by the way, still there on the sideline. How restless is he getting? And I guess how much closer is he to making that return after, the shoulder incident in the off-season?
Yeah, he's certainly restless, no doubt. Such a good player, and he's still trying to lead the group in the best way he thinks possible. And his voice and experience for the our younger players, especially through the midfield, has been great on game day especially. Look, he's back in training shortly, then he's still on track for, you know, the mid-season. So he's tracking along well, and look, we can't wait to get him back.
Yeah, you take on the West Coast, who haven't had a great start to the year, but I'm interested to get your take on, because I read a lot about this kid, Harley Reid from the West Coast Eagles. Have you done a lot of review on him, and what type of player is he, and is he sort of living up to the expectations that was fairly or unfairly placed upon him?
Yeah, look, he's had a lot of expectations, you know, being the number one pick, and then obviously heading over to the West. You know, they're obviously really excited. Off him all the draft footage that we saw, is a super, you know, he reminds me a bit of Dustin Martin. Looked really strong around the ball, beautiful skills, and, you know, can go forward and take a mark as well. Yeah, look, we'll do the homework and on him this week, and, you know, he's played a bit through the midfield and goes forward, so we obviously have plans in place for him, but, you know, their midfield's actually really, really strong, you know, with Tim Kelly and Elliot Yeo going through there, which are really experienced, tough midfielders. So, you know, that'll probably be where it's won on the day. So, you know, our midfield need to be really strong in that area.
Jared, what are the key areas that you need to tidy up following that loss to Richmond?
Probably just our movement in defence. You know, our defence systems, I spoke about it before, but that's probably what we'll focus on this week, as plain as that sounds. You know, the rest of our game probably flows off that. You know, our attack side of the game, you know, if you're in really strong defensive positions, you know, you can really, you know, bounce off that. So that's probably the main thing we'll be looking at this week. And, you know, we saw what the Western Bulldogs did to West Coast in, you know, the second and third, fourth quarters. So we'll look to, you know, to try and exploit them on the other way as well.
And I see some breaking news out of the club this morning, actually a release that James Rowbottom's extended, well, until the end of 2028, so a four-year extension. And, well, he was superb in a losing performance there, of course, for the club on the weekend. But how significant is that for the club to keep Rowbottom for that amount of time, Jared?
Yeah, really good news. I mean, he's such a professional young player. I think he's nearly played 100 games now. So, you know, he's getting his experience up there. Yeah, he's won what is his pressure and elite tackling and, you know, that Swan's way, I guess, of getting after the opposition and never giving up. And he actually played really well on the weekend in a losing team. But, you know, for 4 years and, you know, his leadership qualities are starting to come through a bit as well now, as you know, which will help our young group. That midfield group's, you know, they're all 23, 24, 25 years of age. So if they can, you know, get a... You know, they have played a lot of footy together, but if they can, you know, keep together for the next 6 or 7 years, you know, it's very special times.
Well, big game against West Coast. Gather in. What do you make of the concept overall, Jared? It seems like certainly Adelaide and South Australia comes alive with everyone heading there this weekend.
Yeah, look, it's actually fantastic. You know, obviously in the league with Magic Round, it was a great buzz around those cities, and we had it last year and really enjoyed it. So it'd be good to get over to Adelaide and have all supporters from everywhere coming in to watch. You know, it's a great atmosphere around the Adelaide town. And then we're actually heading a bit further out this time. We actually played Adelaide Oval last year, but it'll be exciting for our players to be able to watch a bit of footy as well and then have the buzz around town.
And to play at Mount Barker, I guess a bit of a throwback for a lot of players.
Certainly.
Very, quite rural, isn't it, there up in the hills?
Yeah, it's about 40 minutes out of town, so we'll head out there Friday and have a look. And yeah, it's the same size as the MCG, so that's good for our players. We want to really run really hard this weekend, but it'd be good to get out there and experience something a little bit different.
Do they place you in different hotels, or do a number of teams stay in the same hotel, Jack?
Not 100% sure, mate. I think last year was only us in the hotel, but we did play on a Thursday night and we were out of there pretty quickly.
Right.
So, not 100% sure. I'm sure every hotel will be full at some stage. But, yeah, I think, you know, most players know each other pretty well and mix, you know, quite easily.
Get them out quickly, Jared.
Yeah, get back to Sydney.
Exactly.
Mate, really appreciate your time this morning, and go well and enjoy gather around there in South Australia.
Thanks very much for having me. Enjoy the day.
Great stuff. Jared McVeigh, Swans assistant. Great player he was as well, wasn't he, Jared McVeigh? And they're $1.03, the Swans. West Coast, $12. This is Saturday, 1:30 Eastern Daylight Time on Fox Footy. 54.5 is the line. And just a reminder, the margin last year, 171 points they beat West Coast by. And West Coast were pathetic against the Western Bulldogs on the weekend.
Have they improved at all?
Oh, barely.
How long have they been poor for? It's been a couple of years now.
They won a comp, the other day, 5 years ago?
2018, they won that grand final against Collingwood. Yeah. The net sort of result of where they are and where they should be is the worst in Australian sport at the moment. They are an enormous club. Yeah. What do you think? Sponsorship dollars, bums on seat. They've got like a membership wait list that's years. And they've got that big stadium over there. And they are appalling.
I went to Melbourne a few months ago. And I know some AFL blokes down there. And they were saying the same thing. That they are the biggest club in Australia. They've got sponsors wanting to sponsor. And they're going, sorry.
Turning them
away. We've got no room. And what you're offering is just not enough. Yeah. It's extraordinary.
It's not good business.
It's
You'll
not
always find room, Bulldog.
Yeah,
you know that.
But I'm talking about on your jumper or wherever it may be.
There's a little patch here somewhere.
Yeah. But it's amazing, isn't it?
Always make room, Bulldog. So always make room.
That's true.
You won't make an entrepreneur.
No, I'm too dumb for that.
He's a West Coast fan, Brad Davison. How are you, Davo?
Yeah, morning, guys. I am. Yeah. How are we?
Yeah. Very well, thank you. We just spoke to Jared McVeigh, and I'll just having a look at the line, 54.5 against the Swans this week. Will you cover that there at the Eagles?
Oh, I doubt it. Look, we're struggling big time. I'm not seeing a lot of improvement this year, which is disappointing. But, it's going to be a tough couple of years still to come for West Coast fans, I think.
Is that right as far as membership wait lists are years there at West Coast?
I know it used to be. I'm not sure if it's still the case now. I think they would get some sort of drop-off with the way they've been going. But, yeah, I remember as a kid there, we sort of got membership with the family, and it was basically if you gave it up, good luck getting back in. So, that's the way it sort of is over there in the West. But I'm not sure if it still is now after the bad run.
Well, hopefully they turn it around at some point, but just not this weekend against the Swans, Davo. But barrier draw was done yesterday for the Doncaster and a couple of other races. Who were the winners and losers? I saw another Will. Drew very, very wide.
He did, Loz. Yeah, he drew barrier 21. He'll come in a couple there if the emergencies don't get a run. But, he's going to jump very wide there in the maximum field of the Doncaster this weekend. Conversely, the likes of Celestial Legend and Obamburamai both drew inside 10. Two of the other major fancies, of course. Obamburamai, the Japanese horse we haven't seen since winning the Golden Eagle. The format of that race has sort of been solid without sort of raving about. So interested to see how he goes this weekend in the Doncaster. But, yeah, it's going to be fascinating. I mean, I think throw the weather into the mix, guys. They're predicting very, very heavy rain in Sydney later this week. So, you know, those barrier draws might not be as important as maybe other years, particularly in the Doncaster, you're allowed to sort of, it seems to be drawing wide there, seems to be okay, providing you can get a bit of cover. And look, rail will be in the true position. And if we do get that rain, sometimes it is down the middle. So those wide barriers can become a bit of an advantage. So I'm not, reading into it too much. I will say the bookies, though, I mean, they quick the firm and when they draw well, but he's drawn the car park another Will and they leave him there at $3.50. That seems a bit silly. So, look, he'll drift. There's no doubt about that off that price. And, I'm surprised the bookies aren't taking him on a little bit more than they are at this stage of the week.
And what do you make overall? The fields, the TJ, the size, the Derby out yesterday as well. And naturally, we'll get the rest of them out today ahead of a bumper day on Saturday.
Yeah, shaping up to be a cracker, Jared, and great to see Imperatriz in Sydney there. She's drawn well in Barrier 6 and, of course, taking on the likes of I Wish I Win and a few other really, really good chances in what's shaping to be a sensational TJ Smith. Sunshine in Paris was so good first up and sure to have plenty of admirers there as well. And in the Derby, of course, Zardozzi deciding to back up there and take on the boys. Riff Rocket holding favouritism narrowly there over Zardozzi, who won't mind that rain to come. And of course, in the size, we get the chance to see if Stormboy can bounce back. I know a lot of people suggested that, he should have won the slipper, but I wasn't in that camp. I thought he's a little bit disappointing, to be honest. And I thought, he's his own worst enemy these days in missing the start. So he has to bounce back. Lady Camelot's been the firmer in early markets, but whether she'll run out the 1,400 metres is a little concern for mine. So good races, you know, good field shaping up, and we'll get those other six races today, no doubt, as well, including the country championships final.
Got a big day today at Newcastle too, don't we? The wild card for the qualifier for the provincial midway championships today.
Yeah, last chance for those in that provincial midway championship to get into the big race there at Newcastle today. So I'm interested to see how that pans out. Look, I thought Wellinger Freefall set up pretty well. He was my midweek tip, actually. He was terrific first up in the Gosford race. He had to go back from the gate and rattled home late. Going to be able to be a lot closer from the draw, steps up in trip, which is ideal, and also on the home track. So I thought there were plenty of positives there for Wellinger Freefall today, and he's going to be the midweek tip there at Newcastle today.
Race 7, number 6 for our listeners, Wellinger Freefall. Race 7, number 6, Newcastle today is $3.60 with Tab, is Davo's tip. Thanks so much, mate.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day. Cheers.